As one's knowledge of human nature grows, one is continually confronted with the problems of understanding one's fellow men and of working harmoniously with those people who possess qualities which are markedly different from one's own. One cannot help being impressed by the almost infinite variety of human beings and by the richness of individuality amongst mankind, as also, of course, by the great diversity of human gifts. As we look at our fellow men, we see the explorer and the nun. How very different. The soldier and the hermit. The monk and the recluse. Then we see the politician and the businessman or businesswoman, outwardly active in world affairs. Then there are the scientists and the scholars immersed in their researches. And all these and many other kinds of human beings, some of them distinctly opposite to each other in character, all these are to be found going to the making up of mankind. Is there then any kind of a key by means of which human nature may be better understood and this complexity of human nature may be comprehended and reduced to some kind of order? Theosophy answers, yes. Yes, there is a key. And further says that the key is numerical, the governing number being 7, the familiar 7. There are, for instance, 7 main types of human beings, each with its own outstanding natural attributes, qualities and powers and weaknesses. But, and this must be remembered, of course, all powers are within every human being. But in each of us, there is a preponderant tendency and capacity. If we can discover this, then the key is found to the understanding of human nature. Let us look at the subject a little more closely. What are these 7 outstanding qualities, and what are the types of men and women by whom they are especially exemplified? Of course, this is an immense subject, and I can't deal fully with it in one address. If you're really interested, I would recommend some theosophical literature, such as The 7 Rays by Professor Ernest Woods, and, if I may, my own book called The Sevenfold Key to Human Character. There you will find that these 7 types and qualifications are referred to as the 7 rays. I suppose the reason for this word rays is that man's innate powers are due to the presence of a particular ray of the divine light, shining predominantly in a particular man or a woman. All the 7 rays, and may I go on using that term from now on? All the 7 rays, then, are in every one of us, and all must eventually be developed to the highest possible degree. Nevertheless, throughout the whole evolutionary process, the basic ray of an individual will still predominate. Now let us take them in turn, shall we? Beginning with what is called the first ray. This is the ray of power. A ray from the first aspect of the Blessed Trinity, the Creator and Father of the universe and all that it contains. Men on this ray, the first, are generally characterized by the qualities of power, will, courage, leadership, and great self-reliance. Their great soldiers, explorers, natural-born leaders and rulers and statesmen. The aggressive dictators who become tyrants are examples of the misdirection for destructive and ugly purposes of the will of God as it becomes active in them. Ultimately, of course, they will turn around, they will be redeemed perhaps by the suffering which comes upon them under the law of action and reaction because of the suffering they've inflicted on others. But ultimately, like everyone else, they will come to good. And this tremendous power of will in them will be turned to constructive purposes only, to the attainment of victory over their own lower nature, and to the conquest and exploration of the highest aspects of the divine in man and in all nature. These first-ray people, whatever they may be at any given time in their human development, these first-ray people become great spiritual leaders. One might almost call them spiritual kings. The explorer's ideal is typical of the first ray: to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. That's typical of the power people. Now what about the second ray kind of folk? This is the ray of universal love and wisdom, the ray of spiritual insight and intuitiveness. And these qualities in second-ray people are generally combined with a deep and natural sense of that oneness with others from which compassion and sympathy are born. So the type of person is the sage, the natural-born teacher and healer of the world, the reformer and the lover of his fellow men. This love becomes all-inclusive. It doesn't exclude anyone. And sometimes this love can overflow to include the members of the lower kingdoms of nature as well, especially the animals, the great humanitarians, and all lovers and protectors of the members of the animal kingdom, like St. Francis was. They all display this quality of the second of the seven rays. In them, the second or the Christ aspect of the Blessed Trinity is predominant, and their destiny is to become Christ-like in all-embracing love and wisdom. The phrase, love is not love, which alters when its alteration signed, partly expresses the second-ray ideal of love. And now the third-ray people. This ray is that of creative ideation, intellectual comprehension and understanding of life and the principles and laws of life. They have certain characteristics as well, such as adaptability, easy adaptability, and impartiality. Tact also is predominant in those of the third ray, and they often possess, by the by, a penetrative and interpretative mind. The type of man, then, is the philosopher, but also the ambassador — that's where the tact comes in, you see — the ambassador, the diplomat, the strategist, the organizer, the chess player, and the judges. All of these, to be successful, must have a great deal of this third ray, higher intellect, operative in them. The great generals of today need to possess both the indomitable and combative willpower of the first ray and the organizing and strategic ability of the third. Field Marshal Montgomery just retired as I talk to you. Field Marshal Montgomery is a good example of this blending of the first and the third ray, for he is described as a swift and fluid tactician, ready when necessary to revise the whole scheme of an attack, as he successfully did in the desert at Mastro, when a stiff Nazi counterattack upset his plan of battle. The psalmist's words express the point of view of this third ray. Give me understanding, and I will keep thy law. Now, see, the fourth ray people. You will notice that in numbers, four and the fourth ray, therefore, four is midway, as it were, between the first and the second set of three, the first and second triplicity in the seven. That's four, and it's sometimes called the ray of balance, of harmony, and also the ray of beauty and of rhythm. The type of man is easy to discern then, isn't it? It's the artist. Though the artistic expression and the medium chosen will be influenced by the presence and the activities of other rays in them. But in general, these people of the fourth ray make the best artists and actors, and in some ways, good teachers. They readily dramatize their subjects, illustrate them well, and they can elevate people, lift us up by the power of beauty. The words of Keats, the English poet, exemplify the artist's highest ideal, I think. He wrote, "We must worship the principle of beauty in all things." And he also wrote, "Beauty is truth, truth beauty. That is all ye know on earth, and all ye need to know." There's the kind of philosophy, yes, and the religion too, of people on the fourth ray. God for them is the principle of beauty in nature and in humanity. What then of the next type, the fifth ray people? In them, the analytical and formal concrete mind is most active. So the fifth ray is that of mental analysis and other attributes of the formal mind of man, that which is sometimes called the legal mentality, capable of reasoning correctly from effect to cause and cause to effect, and of deducing a central general truth from a number of particulars. Such men become the great mathematicians. They have a natural head, as we say, a natural head for figures. The scientists, too, the lawyers, yes, and even the detectives, these belong to the fourth ray. I beg your pardon, I said wrong then, didn't I? They belong to the fifth ray, the ray of mind. Scott, the great explorer, who was a many-sided man with leadership, as first ray, as an outstanding attribute, displayed a fifth ray outlook when he said, "Science is the rock foundation of all effort." But the first ray in Scott was beautifully described in a biography. There you read of him as an undefeatable sportsman, buoyant, indomitable. What a splendid character Scott was. Now we come to the sixth ray, the ray of the crusader, the evangelist, and the martyr. This is the ray of fiery enthusiasm, ardor, one-pointedness, singleness of purpose. the ray of devotion and sacrificial love. Sixth ray people are the mystic, the devotee, the evangelist, the seers often, the martyrs who count life well lost in the service and the furtherance of a great cause or in the service of God. General William Booth, the great and late founder of the Salvation Army, was in that work a blend of the sixth and the first ray. For in serving his master most devotedly and serving his fellow men, he employed the military method of the first ray. You remember how his headquarters are called Citadel, and his newspaper, the War Cry, and he leads his servants of humanity into action in military fashion, with all the military rank from general down to private, and flags flying and bands playing, gathering the people together in the service of the Lord. Well, that kind of activity which he initiated was a blend of first, that's the military quality, and sixth, the devotional aspect of his nature. Now we are coming to the seventh ray, the last, though I shall have a good deal more to say about each of them as far as our time together permits. As I said at the beginning, this is an immense but very fascinating subject and of, I think, of great practical value to us all. But what about the seventh ray people? Well, the seventh ray is that of power in action, of ordered activity, of grace and precision and skill. They also have a natural tendency to display nobility and chivalry and some of the military methods. And occasionally there's a general magnificence and splendor shown out by these people, especially if they can afford to do so. The type of man is also the ceremonialist, the ritualist, the pageant master. He likes to make a great and colorful display, and he's very good at it. The pageant master, and then the producer of plays and movies, and the man and woman of true knightliness and royalty. There's also a certain love of magic in them, and they tend to be perfectionists. They would say, if a thing is worth doing, it is worth doing well. Such then are the seven rays briefly described. You'll remember the first is the ray of power, will, courage, no surrender, self-reliance. The second of universal and rather impersonal love, though they can also love personally and often rather freely, may get them into trouble. Love, but compassion and tenderness and inner wisdom. These characterize the secondary people. Third, the abstract intelligence, the penetrative mind, the creative idealist, and all those kind of people. Fourth ray, the ray of beauty, the artist of this world. Fifth, the ray of the mind, the scientist, the mathematician, and all who, as it were, live in and live by the activities of their intellect. Sixth ray, rather the opposite. They live in their emotions. The crusader, the martyr, the mystic, the devotee, and the loving servant of great causes. Loyalty is one of their great qualities. And then the seventh, as I've said, the ordered expression of will in the physical world and through a trained and skillful physical body. Knightly, chivalrous people, often the Seventh-day folk, are, and they love ceremonial, and colour, and splendour, and words of power, and symbols, and magic in many ways. Such, repeated for you, are the qualities of the seven rays. Power, love, intelligence, beauty, science, devotion, and ordered activity. Seven in all. Now, let us look at each of them a little more closely. Remember that all of the rays are in each one of us, though the method and characteristic of one ray will generally predominate. In the main, the ideal adopted by Scott and taken from Tennyson's Ulysses truly characterizes the first ray: to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. Remember that splendid ideal? To strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. That's the spirit which sends the great explorers out to conquer Everest, to reach the South and the North Poles, to find their way across and tame the desert wastes with all their terrors. To strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. Do you remember what Dr. Wilson said to Captain Oates in that fatal expedition of Scott's to the Antarctic? Oates knew his feet were becoming useless and that he couldn't go on without holding back the party, perhaps fatally. He asked Wilson what to do, and the reply was, "Slog on, just slog on." There, in excelsis, I think, you have one of the great qualities of the first ray. They never give in. For people of the second ray, power, conquering, overcoming people and things, this has no interest whatever. For them, there is no religion higher than love, no achievement greater than effective and loving service. They would agree with the poet who said, "Those who walk in love may wander far, but God will bring them where the blessed are." Beautiful words. Those who walk in love may wander far, but God will bring them where the blessed are. One can well see that such people have no interest in overcoming and killing even enemies. Their tendency is to win them over, to turn enemies into friends. They are very good at teamwork. They like cooperative endeavor instead of individualism and personal success. The character of third ray people is rather well shown in the family motto of one of the great English noble families, the Cavendishes. Their family motto is, in Latin, "Cavendo tuta," meaning "secure by caution." And as I've said, their prayer is, "Give me understanding, and I shall keep thy law, yea, I shall observe it with my whole heart." If you want these people on your side, these third ray men and women, you have to convince their intellect. They won't be moved by any other force than understanding, reasonableness. Interestingly, the motto of the Theosophical Society, whose guests we are, also that of the Maharaja of Benares, is third ray in quality: there is no religion higher than truth. The lofty spiritual ideal of the fourth ray is exemplified in a saying of H.P. Blavatsky, the great co-founder of the Theosophical Society, she, together with Colonel H.S. Olcott, brought this worldwide theosophical society into existence. She is known as a great torchbearer for truth and light bringer to this our modern world. Amongst her many wonderful literary contributions to human knowledge, there is this gem which I found in one of her books. Madame Lubetzky said, "What the true occultist seeks is not knowledge or growth or happiness or power for himself, but having become conscious that the harmony of which he forms part is broken on the outer plane, he seeks the means to dissolve that discord into a higher harmony." There you have the very inner essence of the fourth ray people. If they find that harmony is broken, then they seek means to dissolve that discord into a higher harmony. Oh, I know that that's a very lofty ideal of art and artists, and that few perhaps always live up to it, but it's there, deep in the heart and the mind of the true worshipper and portrayer of beauty. The driving force of the fifth ray, you remember that's the ray of the mind and of the scientist, the driving force of the fifth ray is rather well put by a Mr. Anton J. Carlson, an American scientist, who said, "The greatest thing in science is the scientific method, rechecked observation and experiment, objectively recorded with absolute honesty and without fear or favor." There you have this precise and purely mental approach which makes the great mathematicians and scientists of the world. Mr. Carlson adds a word or two like this. "Science," he says, "in this sense, has as yet scarcely touched the common man or his leaders." I suppose he's right, because we are still so very much moved by our emotions, aren't we? The quality of the sixth ray, you remember that's of devotion, sacrifice, service, idealism and loyalty in service. That quality is wonderfully expressed in a speech, I think, by Mr. Churchill. It's a speech he made to all the ministers of his cabinet, other than war cabinet ministers, and you'll find it repeated in the second volume of his memoirs, that splendid book called Their Finest Hour. The time in which he spoke was just before the catastrophe of Dunkirk, and Churchill writes, he's describing that cabinet meeting, "We were perhaps 25 people round the table. I described the course of events, and I showed them plainly where we were and all that was in the balance. Then I said, quite casually, and not treating it as a point of special significance, 'Of course, whatever happens at Dunkirk, we shall fight on.' Then there occurred a demonstration which surprised me. There was a white glow, overpowering, sublime, which ran through them and through our island from end to end." So spoke and wrote Winston Churchill. That white glow is typical of the burning ardor and fiery fervor of the sixth ray. Coordination and the synthesizing of the many into the one are outstanding characteristics of those people who are on the seventh ray. As I've already said, the ideals are physical efficiency, perfection, order in all the conduct of life, power perfectly and irresistibly made manifest. Perhaps it might be interesting and helpful to each one of us in finding our own major ray and sub-rays if I just mentioned also some of the weaknesses of the rays. For example, the weaknesses of the first ray, the ray of power. They're very easy to see, aren't they? They are power gone wrong, misused. Tyranny, pride, domination, thirst for power, and individualism. In the second ray, the ray of universal love, they're inclined to fall for a time into sentimentality and even they can be rather impracticable people, and they can undermine the self-reliance of people by unwise self-sacrifice for them. The third ray people, with their adaptability and tact and ability to seize the situation and use the means most suitable to it, they can fall into indecision, seeing too many sides, into intrigue and expediency, and even low cunning, which can mar the expression of those higher qualities. Fourth ray people, the artists, they suffer from alternation of moods, the well-known artist's temperament, which they are rather inclined to indulge. Fifth ray people, the purely mental type, they can become rather materialistic and self-centered. They can suffer from smallness of vision, a certain amount of pride, and even narrowness. They are great critics. They like breaking bubbles, so to speak, breaking people's ideals by tearing them to pieces mentally. And then they will say, yes, but I'm always doing it for your own good. Sixth ray people, those who live by their feelings, risen to the great heights of ardor, devotion, worship, enthusiasm, they can fall naturally, one can see, into over-emotion, impulsiveness, and their one-pointedness can lead them to intolerance and fanaticism and blind devotion to personalities. The seventh ray people who love perfection of outer form can fall into the error of undue formalism, the love of power and office, and they're rather inclined, if they're not careful, to play politics and to maneuver and engineer themselves into positions of prestige and power. Regimentation comes fairly readily to them also. But these are only temporary faults, of course. We all have some of them, but those of our ray tend to predominate in us. We shall outgrow them, and as we approach the perfection of manhood, which is our destiny, then only the highest and purest and noblest qualities of our rays will shine out. And please remember, and I say this to you as I begin to draw my address to a close, please do remember this: the powers and the qualities of all the rays are in each one of us, And each of them, all the seven, will one day be developed to the highest possible pitch, to the degree of genius. And we shall have the power perfectly to express those qualities. Life is indeed a school which is drawing out of us our seed-like, latent, partially developed powers, helping us to bring them to the perfection which is our goal. Part of the great value, I think, of this knowledge of the seven rays is that it breeds tolerance. Tolerance born of understanding, particularly towards those from whom one differs. If you know about the rays, you can understand people who are not like yourself, can see that each human being is rightly following his own road, the right road for him, to his own goal. And this is very important in life and in our attitude towards our fellow men. When not harmful to others, their way must be respected, even though it may, as I've just said, be very different from one's own way. This broad outlook, this tolerance, is beautifully expressed in a Hindu scripture in which the Lord of the universe, speaking through the lips of the Lord Sri Krishna on earth, says in effect these words: mankind comes to me along many roads, and along whatsoever road a man approaches me, on that road do I welcome him. For the roads men take on every side are mine.